Well, it happened. He moved across the country to get away from me.
Ellen, not everything is about you.
We are a bi-coastal podcast, everyone. Bi-coastal.
For the summer, I'm not running from you. I'm running from me. And that's the name of my autobiography, Joey Taranto, Running From Me.
Point, click, print! Hi, Joey.
Hello, Yellen Marsh. How are you? I'll tell you how I am. I am in my bed in California. I have a mic propped up to my mouth. I have a duvet over the door. Everything's fine.
Show business is great, everyone. And we are in the slums of it, of the business of show. We're in the dregs. Welcome to I Think Not, the podcast where Joey and I feel like we do best when we're across the country from each other. I am Ellen Marsh, and across from me is old blue eyes over there, Joey Taranto. And we are here to recap all of your favorite true crime TV shows, episode by episode, sprinkled in with a little bit of butt stuff, religious trauma, and just trauma dumping in general. Welcome. Come on in. The water's fine.
And missing dads.
Sure. Missing dads. Someone sent me a message the other day on Instagram, and she accidentally sent me something, and it was about Father's Day.
Yeah.
And I thought she was joking. I was like, oh, funny. She goes, oh, my God, that was meant for my sister. I would never send two people without dads a Father's Day. I was like, this is a safe space. We love to laugh about our trauma here. We're all good.
I responded with a voice note. I saw that, and I went, you're good, babe. You're good.
But if you would like a little more of Joey and I, please head over to our Patreon. That is where, for as little as $5 a month, you can get 4 bonus episodes. We cover all kinds of stuff there. I guarantee you, if you name your top 5 true crime TV shows, we have covered it on the Patreon. We're talking Southern Fried Homicide, Pink Collar Crimes, I Almost Got Away With It, Snapped, See No Evil. There are so many episodes ready for you to download and binge. We just closed our next quarter merch box, which are our top tier, but you can get all kinds of fun stuff. And don't forget, we're going to see you all live very soon. If you are in Nashville, Minneapolis, or Phoenix, we're winding down this show. This is your last chance to see our Almost Got Away With It show that we are very, very proud of. But don't worry, I'm sure we'll tour again in the fall.
Yeah, we will. And you know what our favorite part has been? It's always after the show when everyone lines up to hug us and kiss us and take a picture. It's just great because it's another way that we get to embrace you all and hear your stories. And it's like a lovely cherry on top of the sundae. I have a great time with that.
Yes. So if you want any more information about that, you can visit our website at I Think Not Pod. Click See Us Live. And then if you want to just check out what our Patreon is about, that's at patreon.com/I Think Not. Anything else we need to tell the devil? Bitches, Joey?
No.
All right, let's continue on with American Greed, Season 9, Episode 4, A Widow's Web.
In this episode of American Greed, Pam Phillips and Gary Triano, their charmed life makes others green with envy.
The public saw them as a power couple. They saw her as beautiful. They saw him as charismatic.
He's a mega millionaire developer. She's a socialite. But don't envy them because the money isn't his.
He owed a lot of people a lot of money and declared bankruptcy. So Gary had a lot of enemies.
And when greed takes hold of their marriage, is there anything they won't do for money?
I am very serious about this.
You're going to be very serious when you sit in a women's prison for murder.
Well, Lisa Kudrow, tell us where we are headed.
Woo! Watch out, Tucson! Here we come!
Thank you, Lisa. Yes, we are in Tucson, Arizona in the 80s, and apparently we can't escape Arizona.
I was just going to say, between Playboy Murders, which we're covering on the Patreon, and this show, we've spent a lot of time in Arizona. I'm taking it as a sign.
You know that Arizona changed its state motto, don't you?
No.
Yeah. Welcome to Arizona. We're the new Florida.
Oh! Now you pissed off Arizonians. Is that what they're called? Arizonians and Floridians. But welcome. You know what? We offend everyone here. So you're in good company. Most of the time we just offend ourselves.
I literally was about to say we offend ourselves. Well, we hear about a man named Gary Triano who was a developer and bingo hall pioneer. Can someone please elaborate on the bingo hall pioneer part? That is so random. And what the fuck does that mean exactly?
There's so many jobs.
So many.
You could be a pioneer of anything. You could be a butt stuff pioneer. You never know. Just have a thing and say you're the pioneer of it. What are people going to do? Google it?
Yeah. What?
Who's a bingo hall pioneer? You know, that's not going to pop up on a Google search.
Hopefully. Well, anyway, Gary's best friend, who is also his business partner, is here. A man named Rusty Sands, and that is not a real name. Next thing you know, you're going to tell me his cousin's name is Silky Gutters, and he has an aunt named Soiled Corn Pie. It's just random words put together.
I thought it actually kind of sounded like a porn name. Like, you know, like, he's like, oh, my name's Rusty Sands. That's my brother, Johnny Shit Knuckles. And
and then this is our other cousin, Bob.
My dad's name is Mike Hawk. And oh, come on. We're the bird. His name is Mike Hawk. Come on. Are these real names?
No, they're not.
Rusty Sands?
Well, Rusty Sands is here and tells us that Gary was one of the originators of bingo halls on...
He didn't like...
That's not right.
He was an originator of bingo. This man invented bingo.
Okay, let me amend that statement. He was the originator of bingo halls on Native American reservations, and this made him a lot of money.
Triano is well known around Tucson for his wealth and his larger-than-life personality.
Very self-assured, very flamboyant, liked the center of attention, but could typically back it up. Yeah, he was a lot of fun to be around.
Rusty Sands looks us dead in our eyeballs and dead ass says, he was a lot of fun to be around. If you want to torture my dead soul once I have crossed over on this earth, please speak about me with the amount of enthusiasm that Rusty fucking Jiggle Tits over there speaks about Gary. Because I was like, can we get a little up and down in the voice? He was a lot of fun to be around.
No, he's been roaming planet Earth with that name. He's been through enough. That's the most you're going to get out of him.
Well, poor Rusty.
So it's 1985, and that year brought us so many amazing songs, too many to list. I won't get into it with you.
Yeah, don't. Let's move on. Let's move on.
But it also brought Gary a new friend. Enter Pamela Phillips.
And they met at a bunch of parties, sort of out, you know, the party scene in Tucson. Gary was married at this time, but they were a little flirty, and Gary was picking up what Pam was putting down, and he falls for her a bit. So much so that he's like, how about I see to this divorce, and then in less than a year, we get married. Does that sound like a good idea? And she's like, only if I can wear a hat with a veil attached to it. That's the only circumstances under which I will get married.
Well, he agreed, and she did, because she made it very clear that she wanted him to throw his hot dog down her hallway until death do us part. Also, they spared no expense on this very lavish wedding.
Did you see that Dynasty style hat with the veil attached?
Oh, I love the headband that points right at the third eye part of your forehead. Mm-hmm. It's very 80s. You know, listen, they were making a lot of money. She was a real estate agent, very successful in her own right. They have two kids. They buy a beautiful home at Skyland Country Club. They are very highfalutin.
Well, Gary had two kids from another marriage, and he and Pam have two kids. Don't worry. We're never going to hear about them ever again. They're not part of this storyline at all. I've never seen kids be less of a storyline. They're like, and they had two kids.
Yep.
On we go.
Well, Carrie Droban is here, who is a criminal defense attorney who wrote about the couple in a book called A Socialite Scorned. So I have a feeling that this caviar dream is going to turn into a nightmare very quickly.
They ran around with the likes of Donald Trump. They would go to their estate in Mar-a-Lago. They had two Jaguars. They lived in this beautiful house. They thought nothing of jet setting off to, you know, some exotic locale for the weekend.
That paints a very clear picture of what we're dealing with here.
Mm-hmm. She also said they liked the nicer things in life. They had two Jaguars, not the car. They had the big cats.
Right, right.
It was it's a whole Carol Baskin crossover mm-hmm. situation. But they were loving their life until the late 80s, when the real estate market started to crash a little bit and they started to lose money. And they started to owe a lot more money than they were taking in.
Oh, Reaganomics. You fucked us all in the butt in the end. Gary's fortune began slipping away. Now, remember, Gary was an investor in the bingo halls on Native American reservations. He gets a cut from those profits, and because of that, he decides to invest more money into the company. But in the early 90s, the laws changed, allowing Native American tribes to maintain all the profits from gaming on their reservations. So that means Gary's contract with all of those reservations is cut, and he's even more in debt.
Yeah, he's in the red, and red is a good color to wear, but, you know, never a good color to be, you know, the flags, the debt, all that stuff.
Right.
And they basically explained to us that Gary owed money to people that would kill him.
Basically.
Like, it wasn't like he owed money to Chase. Like, he owed money to Jabroni Spaghetti Sauce Bolognese family.
Very famous family. Mm-hmm. And the lawyers for all of these people that he owed money to, they said, you owe us $2.6 million. And I'm telling you now that if you file for bankruptcy, these people will kill you. And I mm-hmm. guess that meet and Gary turned into Kimmy Schmidt.
I'm not really here. I'm not really here.
Despite the warning, he goes ahead and files for bankruptcy in 1994. With an estimated $26 million in debt.
$26 million in debt. I cannot fathom that type of money.
There should be a cutoff. Like, once you get to a million, we're gonna cover you up to a million, but $26 million, that is erroneous. Absolutely not. And Pam doesn't know what's happening. She's like, wait, why am I in a bankruptcy lawyer's office? Wait, holy shit, how many pending lawsuits does he have? 74? How much does he owe you, attorneys? He owes his ex-wife almost $2 million. He is nothing but debt. And all of a sudden, Pam's like, this is not what I signed up for, because Pam was no slouch. She came into the marriage with like $2 million. She had her own money, but she was like, I really saw this as a step up in my life. What's happening here?
Yeah, not on the episode. He owed everybody money. He owed money to Chicken George and Cousin Plooky, Peter the Singing Plumber, Marge the Nail Tech. I think he might owe me $5.
Honestly, everyone check your receipts. Pam was like, I was only putting up with your face that looks like a slapped ass because you were loaded. And she files for divorce.
Quicker than you can say, I'm not really here. Honey, Pam was not playing. Do not play with Pam. And for her next trick, she waits for Gary to go out of town for the weekend. And on that weekend, she sells the fucking house, gets a $300 profit, takes their two kids and
$300,000 profit.
What did I say?
$300.
Could you imagine? Oh, $300? Great. I'm headed to Aspen.
Oh, this is really going to get me out of some jams. This is great.
So she gets a $300,000 profit, takes their two kids, and she hightails it out of Tucson and lands in Aspen. So Gary literally is left with nothing but debt.
No wife, no kids, and before you know it, it's November 1st, 1996, and he does what anybody whose life is sort of falling apart, you know, he goes and seeks financial advice, he goes to get therapy. JK, Gary just wants to play golf.
Yeah, Gary was a creature of habit. He always played golf at the same time with the same partner at the La Paloma Country Club. That is until Mr. La Paloma himself showed up with an overdue bill and says, you out of here, buddy. You don't pay, you don't play.
Yeah, they were like, hey, Gerber, what's up? How's your par? No one cares. You owe us a shit ton of money.
Triano plays 18 holes. Then he makes the walk to his parking spot, as he's done so many times before. Only this time, there is someone watching and lying in wait. Someone who has placed a blue bag on Gary's passenger seat.
That does not belong to him. Allegedly, he reaches for it, and y'all, the car blows up, killing a 52-year-old Gary Triano instantly.
And Stacy Keach basically was like, his last day of Gary's life was spent on the golf course. I was like, dude, you are loud. You have a great voice. I know you have a great acting history. But oh my God, I didn't know what was going to happen, but I didn't see like death in the cards on this show. And we see pictures of this explosion. We see the reenactment and then we see the actual pictures. This car, there's no roof. The windshield ended up like 100 feet away in a pool. It is so scary to see.
Yeah, well, Detective James Gamber is here and he inspected the scene and he was in utter shock. Like, I mean, it was truly catastrophic. So also the bomb squad investigates the scene. scene, and they determined quickly that this was a very basic pipe bomb, but obviously extremely deadly, and it was detonated by a remote control, which could have not been any further than a quarter of a mile away. So the police now know that Gary was absolutely murdered, and so do the people of Tucson. And it sparks a ton of rumors about who might be involved.
Well, yeah, because everyone knew he sort of owed a lot of money to a lot of people. And they kind of were like, I mean, a lot of people wanted Gary dead, am I right? Which is actually confusing to me, because if someone owes you money, they're definitely not going to pay you back if they're dead. So why would the people who he owed all this money to kill him? So they're like, all right, let's go to the wife first. Now, remember, Pam Phillips is in Aspen, and they go and they question her, and they say she was actually pretty cooperative.
She sat down with me on three separate occasions and talked.
Pam Phillips is the beneficiary of a $2 million life insurance policy on Gary. And 2 months after Gary's death, she receives the money.
In my mind, there wasn't enough evidence to say she's a suspect.
So with no suspects, no leads, no new evidence, the case goes cold after 8 months, and nothing happens for almost, wait for it, 10 years. That is insane.
So then we actually go back 2 years before the murder. Now, this time, Pam had just divorced Gary and moved to Aspen. Remember, she made that whopping $300 on the sale.
I hate you.
And she wants to start over. And they say in the show that she needs to find a way to make ends meet. I feel like Aspen isn't a place that you go to make ends. It feels like all the ends are already met, and that's where you get a second home that resembles a ski lodge. Like, there are other places to live in the country if you're really living hand to mouth and you're living paycheck to paycheck. Am I right?
Absolutely. Pam doesn't give a fiddle as fuck about that. She moves to Aspen and she starts making friends and connections with wealthy people to start making a name for herself. But the thing is, she was a real estate agent, right? The real estate market is saturated in this town, so it's a much harder market than Tucson. Also, she's used to a certain way of life and she does not have the income to support it. That's when she gets creative. She creates a website called starbabies.com, which really could be so many things.
So many. I did not know where this was going, and I didn't actually have this on my list at all.
Nope. It's a website that predicts the future of newborns using astrology.
Mm-hmm.
What?
She's like, this is going to make me millions.
This is where the moon and the stars and the this and the that and the Gorgals and the Slackics and the tarot card readings tell you how your newborn baby Hensley is going to navigate life. Okay, all right. But you know what? Pam needs some help to do this. That's where a man named Ron Young comes in.
Not only does he help her in her business, apparently they also start dating, which is very curious because they've said 27 times in this show how beautiful Pam is, and this man looks like he was on the receiving end of a rusty hammer. I'm just very confused.
And this is the part of the episode where American greed just drags this man for filth.
He was unsophisticated, not attractive, not wealthy. He couldn't take her to the locales that she was used to.
Why are they holding back?
Yeah, they're like, he was awful.
He had plaque on his teeth.
He was ugly.
He had a perpetual runny nose.
He couldn't touch his toes.
He had a receding hairline.
He had bad breath.
He had a bit of rosacea that he didn't take care of.
He was not funny.
He was not coordinated.
He liked Limp Bizkit.
He hated sports.
He wore camo.
He wheezed at the end of the last word that he would say in a sentence, made people feel very uncomfortable.
He was classless, brainless, and had very hairy toes.
Why are we reading this man for filth?
I was like, good Lord, American greed needs to take an American Xanax because y'all are very up in arms. Calm down.
It was like that episode they felt the need to tell us everybody's weight.
And height.
And weighing in at 200 pounds.
I was like, this is American greed, not a heavyweight championship. Well, listen, I'll tell you what Ron was good at. Listening. He would listen to Pam complain morning, noon, and night nonstop about Gary, especially when it came to the fact that he didn't help support her or the kids in any way. And Ron was like, I want to fix this for you.
Mm-hmm. So now we jump back to 1996. And right around this time, Ron had gotten into a little work trouble. He was sued for fraud. And also, Pam was like, let me get in on that. He stole and ripped me off. You know, I had this brilliant idea about predicting a baby's future. It was Star Baby's. Never mind. It doesn't matter. It was a $1 million idea, and he fucked it all up for me.
Yeah, it started with poop babies, where I predicted through astrology, the sun, moon, and stars, when your baby would poop next. The numbers didn't add up. I couldn't quite figure it all out. But Star Baby's had potential. Anyway, Aspen Police Detective James Crawley tries to track Ron Young down, but he realizes very quickly that Ron done rented a van at the airport and took the fuck off.
So yeah, he totally bounced. So they're like, all right, well, let's charge him. They charge him with 2 counts of theft, 2 counts of forgery, and they issue a warrant for his arrest. But I mean, that's all well and good, my mans, but they don't know where he is. He's gone.
He's gone, pecan. So 2 months later, Detective Crawley learns that the van Ron rented was found in Yorba Linda, California, near his parents' house. It had been impounded, and he was trying to get it out, but then he heard the police were coming, and Ron was like...
So James Crawley flies from Colorado to California because he needs to inspect that van. Also, he's never been to, like, the wineries mm-hmm. in California, and yeah. he really wanted to, like, take a look, which, mm-hmm. you know, makes sense if you're going to kill 2 birds with 1 stone.
Yep.
And he finds some stuff in that car.
Inside, he finds some interesting documents.
There were business documents from Star Babies, divorce paperwork between Gary Triano and Pamela Phillips.
There are also maps of Tucson, hotel receipts from Tucson, a stolen Arizona license plate, and a shotgun inside.
They also find a really hefty collection of Cher's greatest hit CDs. So they were like, okay, this is a gay guy. And that spun it in a whole different direction. Just kidding. They also found a shotgun.
And a taser. This is absolutely a fucking murder van. Maps of Tucson. Now, none of this at the time made sense to Detective Crawley. Until 2 weeks later, when he opens up his newspaper and reads about a car bomb that killed Gary Triano. And now he's connecting the dots. And he calls Detective Gamber at the Pima County Sheriff's Department in Tucson.
I put 2 and 2 together, and I was looking through that man's van. Now listen, I did not know we were looking for a gay man. I did not see this sad story coming. How do I know he's gay? Well, he had a lot of Cher CDs in there. Like, too many. I didn't even know she had that many. I know she reinvented herself several times since the 70s, but truth be told, she doesn't have a lot of hits. So it was very... Hello? Are you still there?
It's confusing. She actually really doesn't have that many hits.
It is confusing. Well, they end up speaking with Pam again, and she only says that Ron did some paperwork for her. That's it. She downplays their relationship. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, detectives learned through hotel receipts that Ron Young spent about 18 days in Tucson. That was in June and July, and Gary's murder was in November. But that doesn't stop them from wanting to speak with Ron about what he was doing there. He didn't have any friends or family. He had no ties to Tucson. So why was he there? The problem is this. Where the fuck is Ron? Where is Ron? We don't know where Ron is. We got his share tapes. We got his taser. We got his license plate. We've got a shotgun. We do not have Ron. We know he's classless, charmless, ugly. We know he's got hairy toes. We know he's got bad breath. We just don't know for ourselves. Bring Ron Young in here.
And also, who goes to Arizona in June and July? It's like the surface of the sun.
We do.
Oh, yeah, we have a live show.
We do.
Come to our live show.
Meanwhile, Pam Phillips collects a payout from Gary's life insurance policy. $2 million. If Pam has been building a castle in the sky, $2 million allows her to put a foundation under it.
She made her ends meet in Aspen, bought a new home, remodeled the house, got back into the lifestyle that she was most accustomed to.
Yeah, she's back in business. She found her way into Aspen's elite inner circle, skiing and partying with all the rich folks. And in the 10 years that Gary's case went cold, Pam was living it up and Ron was nowhere to be found. So now we hit 2005. Detective Gamber of the Pima County, Arizona Sheriff's Department decides to start working on Gary's case again.
Well, they set it up that they were like, what are you doing? Nothing. A little bored. Oh, all right. What should we do? I don't know. Do you want to go through like some unsolved murder cases or something? Or like, yeah, what do you got? What about that guy from that car bombing? So they're like, fine, I guess. There's nothing else to do in Tucson.
Well, His case file contained about 300,000 pages of paperwork. Jesus Christ. As overwhelming as that may be, Detective Gamber was still focused on Ron Young being a suspect. But Ron's been on the lam for 9 years. So, what do? Tell him what they do, Yellen.
They were like, one night, they were all watching America's Most Wanted, and they're like, oh my God, I would really love some help on this case. Should we call America's Most Wanted and see if they can help us find Ron Young? And they do. And it airs on November 19th, 2005, and it just so happened that some guy was at home watching, and he was a chiropractor. He was like, wait, I chiropract on that guy. I practice chiropractory on that man. I would know those hairy toes anywhere. Those are Ron Young's hairy toes.
Yeah, I crack his knuckles, crack his toes, and I tweak his nipples. Don't ask too many questions. This is Popana Beach, Florida. So he's like, he has an appointment with me soon. I can give you the details so that when he arrives, you can nab him. Well, police jump all over that, and they arrest Ron when he shows up for his adjustment. That's right. No neck cracking for you today, sucker.
Sucker.
And we see the footage of his arrest. This man is old.
He's so old. And they have him on the ground, like on the ground, putting his hands behind his back. I was like, you're going to hurt old Pap Pap. I don't think he's running very far. I don't think this man has touched his toes since the 80s. I don't think he's walked around the block since 1986. You guys have him. You got him. He's not going anywhere.
They were a little rough with him. Anyway,
he was just like an old man. We don't know what happened. We just saw him on the ground. But when he got up, first of all, he's tall. He is. He's big. He's got a big belly. I was like, where's that guy going?
And the goal was to put him into custody on the Colorado fraud charges and for us to talk to him about the Gary Triano murder.
Young denies any involvement in Triano's murder, and he gives police consent to search his home, car, and storage locker.
Now, why this man offered up his storage locker is beyond me, because in it, they found a fuck ton of evidence, paperwork, a computer, and cassettes containing recorded phone calls, 500 of them being between himself and Pamela Phillips.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm in Walmart, shopping like a mad woman to get back to the kids who are swimming on their own with a bunch of fat, gross bodies down at the Glenwood Springs pool.
Nice place, huh?
Oh, jeez.
That call seems fairly innocuous, not anything that would lead them to believe that anything nefarious was going on. But hold on to your hats, there's more.
They also found like 100 emails they exchanged over 8 years. Yeah, these two like to talk about money. A lot.
Mm-hmm.
Apparently, Pam is sending Ron cash via FedEx on a regular basis. There's a lot of calls with Pam giving Ron the tracking numbers, and not only are these calls recorded, but Ron keeps track of it all using spreadsheets. We have an organized crook here, everyone. Organized.
I might be embezzling and maybe dabbling in illegal activity, but I will have my shit in order if anyone comes a-knockin'.
Yeah, this man was the Harris Klein of the crime world.
Lane.
It's Klein.
It's K Lane. It's Harris K Lane, because her maiden name is Kiefer.
Okay.
We're recording. You're on the radio.
Okay.
I just wanted you to know that Joey, with his full chest, just called you Harris Klein.
I called him out for that, like, literally on the
radio. I said, I was like, it's Kay Lane. Her maiden name is Kiefer.
I literally called him out for that. I was like, you know that's not my name, right?
Do you want me to fire him? Just say the word.
Yeah, can you actually do it right now?
Yeah, you're fired.
And he also didn't follow me on Instagram. He was like, yeah, I do. He didn't.
I follow her now.
He's an animal.
I follow her now.
Well, I mean, to be fair, your content is subpar.
You know what? You love my content. It's all for you.
Okay, we have to go to work. Somebody has to work in this company. Bye.
So the question is, why would he keep all of this? Why would you not destroy it? The man was supposed to be brilliant, but this is the dumbest thing I've heard since they decided to make a Sharknado 12.
First First of all, I don't know why he recorded so many phone calls. He had, like, there are 500 phone calls, re-recorded every single one of them, and then being like, go check my stuff. Like, what? So over the last 10 years, they had 44 financial transactions, and at some point she fell behind on the payment. And basically, they sort of were able to put two and two together that the total amount they were dealing with was $2 million, which, as you recall, was the life insurance payout, because he basically says, you got your 1.6, I want my 4. So the officials were like, this had to be a deal. This sounds like a deal, right? This sounds like a deal has happened.
It sounds very much premeditated. Also, their phone calls got increasingly contentious toward the end.
Well, I don't want to loan money for somebody for most of a decade. Look, Can I finish a sentence? Will you allow me to finish a sentence?
Apparently, Ron, you cannot finish a sentence. You sound like a parrot. But Ron was getting really pissed.
I actually love this conversation.
Right now, I want to know, and I'm going to go figure out what it is, and I'm going to try to figure out how to get it to you. But right now, I want to know that we are capping it at 4. I don't want this nebulous thing out there that we're supposed to...
It's not nebulous.
I don't want anything past our agreement. I am very serious about this.
Well, I tell you, you're going to be very serious when you sit in a women's prison for murdering... When you sit in a women's prison for murder...
Hang up, I'll be back at 4.
You're going to be really sad.
He was really bummed he messed up that delivery. He had been practicing that. When you sit in a women's prison with women who are in... Damn it. When you, ma'am, are in a... A place that houses... Okay, listen, there's prison for men,
yep.
And then there's prison for women, and you're gonna go to the... God damn it!
It's like when someone insults you and you're a little kid, and you're just like, oh yeah? Well, you are ugly. Ugly.
It really went better in his head. We've all done it. We've all practiced in the shower, and then it just didn't come out right, Ron. You're gonna be a woman in prison.
Yep. You really told me, Ron. You got me good. So the picture is becoming very clear. You know, Ron even says on another call, you're living off of the benefits of... Well, you know. And that's the thing that should be stated is no one ever says, you hired me to kill Gary. There's no confession in that way. It's just a lot of, you owe me money and I want my money.
To your point, they don't say, here's the money for killing Gary.
Right.
But like, what else could these conversations mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it, if not all of it, is circumstantial. So on October 16th, 2008, both Pam Phillips and Ron Young are indicted for first-degree murder. Now, here's the thing. Pam has conveniently moved to Lake Lugano in Switzerland.
I hear it's lovely this time of the year.
Yeah, it started with her visiting her daughter who was going to school there. And then Pam met a rich man in the area and Switzerland was looking really good to her. And it didn't hurt that Switzerland refuses to extradite suspects who are potentially facing the death penalty. But it turns out the police were not pursuing the death penalty and they were very public about it, which means there's no reason Pam can't be extradited. So she does what any innocent person would do. She ran so far.
Will she get away?
That's right. When the police showed up at her Swiss hotel room, as we say in New Orleans, she flew the coop. What did she do? Flew the coop. The coop was flew. It flew the coop.
So they're super excited that they get to travel so much on this investigation. But they're like, we have to head back. I love your chocolate and your miss. And they're like, okay, try and find her. We got to go back to the States. But also, Ron is on trial in Tucson. And their prosecution's case is solely based on the tapes that Ron made and opened the door for investigators to go get. He built his entire prosecution against him.
Can I just ask this question one more time?
Always, honey.
Ron Young, if you're listening... Why the fuck?
He's in the Hallelujah, What's It To You tier.
Great.
He's here.
Why the fuck would you give permission to police to search your storage unit when you knew what the fuck was in there? You laid it all out. You are a dummy. Anyway, in a twist of events, American Greed interviewed Ron Young. Take a listen.
I'm absolutely innocent. I did not participate, did not plan. I never heard Pamela discuss anything like this. Absolutely completely 100% innocent.
So Ron says in 1996, he left Aspen in that van with his son for a long road trip. He wasn't running.
No! We wanted to see the Grand Canyon. Hello, I can only do that in my car.
And turns out the canyon is grand.
And so is the land that we know is grand. And the grand one just says, hey, ow, are you by you, are you? They're only saying, you're doing fine, Oklahoma, Oklahoma. You're a homo, Oklahoma. I rewrote it.
Wow, that was beautiful.
And they're like, okay, well, if you were on this big vacation with your son, of course, and you found out you were wanted for fraud, why didn't you come back? And Ron was like, I just like didn't think it was that big of a deal. Like, it's not like a bad crime. Like, it's just fraud. Like, I didn't know what to do. And then he said he had never been in trouble with the law, so he had no experience with criminal activity. I mean, you got to start somewhere, babe, okay? I mean, just, you can start with fraud, work your way up to casual murder, and then you can make excuses from there. I mean, like, if you're in trouble with the law, go see what the trouble is.
Okay. You know how many times they tell us on this episode that Ron Young was brilliant? I have yet to see a brilliant thing that Ron Young has done. He's like, nope, I didn't think it was that big of a deal. Sir, I don't care if you've never committed any crime. If you are charged with fraud and theft and whatever else, bad breath, I think you have to figure that out. None of what this man is saying makes sense. So then he says this.
I figured it would go away, and I just ignored it. As it turned out, eventually it came back and kicked me in the hind end.
Yes, Ron, I would say your high end has been kicked. And that money they discussed on the phone, the $2 million, it wasn't from the life insurance policy, according to Ron. It was pertaining to Pam's real estate development in San Diego, and he was a financial consultant on that project, so he just wanted to be paid, and that explains everything.
There you go. We no murder stuff here, just some silly goose real estate transactions, just normal stuff that equaled $2 million. I was owed for work. I did work.
Think about it. I haven't. Then how do you explain this cryptic conversation?
I have not talked to a soul. I have not talked to a soul.
And nobody's contacted you.
And nobody's contacted me. No.
Okay.
And, you know, if I have to kill myself and go to my grave and not say a word after that. But I'm just so miserable.
That does not sound like a chat over real estate development in San Diego. You know what I'm saying?
No. I mean, listen, I love pre-war construction with a good foundation as much as the next guy. That can make me choked up and maybe talk in hushed tones. You all sound like you're hiding something.
Absolutely. But here's the thing. They have no evidence, no physical evidence tying Ron Young to the actual crime scene. But they do know Ron was in Tucson under an assumed name several months before the murder.
Okay, so all the evidence they have is circumstantial.
All of it.
No forensics linked to it, no eyewitness. So this, when they're explaining it, seems a little far-fetched. They're like, so you were in Tucson in June and July. Okay, do you know where Tucson is on the map? Have you ever been in a car? Have you ever seen a car? Don't you think that's a little suspicious? Can you spell Tucson? It's sneaky. There's a silent C in there. I think there's something suspicious.
Arrest him!
It just seems like a pretty big gap. Sure, he could have been stalking Gary during that time, watching his movements, gathering information, but a murder that happened in November. Now, granted, he has no business in Tucson. He has no family, he has no relations. That's all suspicious, but being like, he was in Tucson 6 months before.
Yeah, it does not make any sense. I mean, listen, could Ron have murdered Gary? Absolutely. In the eyes of the law, where is the evidence? Circumstantial evidence, and it's all circumstantial. But circumstantial evidence or not, it didn't matter to the jury because in March of 2010, Ron Young was found guilty and is sentenced to two consecutive life sentences. I'm going to say this for the first time I've ever said this on our entire show. I disagree with this verdict.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's all circumstantial. Those calls are weird. They could have stolen that money, but it doesn't really link to murder. And when they're saying it, they're saying it. You know what, like a salesman is saying is they do all kinds of things, like they're nodding their head and you're like, I mean, wait, he was in Tucson 6 months before. Okay, actually, I'm going to need you to walk me through that again.
Yeah.
It seems like the dots should be connected, but I don't see how they actually connect them.
Yeah, I'm not saying that Ron is innocent, but what I'm saying is you do not have enough to convict him. I'm sorry. I do not agree.
Now, Tucson authorities need to find Pam Phillips, who is somewhere in Europe, so she can have her day in court.
Between Interpol and the police in Geneva, the criminal brigade, they did a lot of work, and they tracked her to Liechtenstein and then into Vienna. And then the police in Vienna arrested her on our arrest warrant.
Vienna, great schnitzel.
Don't ruin Vienna for me. It's like one of my favorite cities in the whole world.
Oh my God, it's beautiful, and they have great schnitzel. I told you that when I was in Bible college, we went on a missions trip to Vienna, and while everyone was spreading the good news of Jesus Christ, I snuck into a bar and was drinking beer and eating schnitzel. You spread your good, you spread the good news your way, I will spread it mine.
And by good news, we mean butt cheeks. So it's July 2010. And Pam is brought back to Tucson. She lands in Tucson. And again, American Greed, they're not giving her anything. They're like, Pam looks worn and tired.
I'm like,
she looks like she hasn't seen a night cream in months.
She's wearing a fucking shawl. She's been on a flight for forever running from the police. My Lord, give the woman a break. She's 53 years old and y'all are trying to accuse her of murdering her husband. So anyway, Pamela pleads not guilty. And on February 18th, 2014, Pam goes to trial. That's 4 years from the time she was extradited back to the States. Do you think she was in prison that whole time?
No, I have a story. I'll tell you at the end of the episode.
Okay.
Pam's attorneys absolutely believe in her innocence. They're not defending her and ensuring that she gets a proper trial, a proper and fair trial, because that is the job of a defense attorney. They believe wholeheartedly in her innocence. And these defense attorneys are giving. They're like, I mean, she's been paying these life insurance premiums, but the month before Gary died, she stopped paying. What? How could this be a plot for money?
Yeah, the defense is like, if you were planning on murdering your husband for the money, wouldn't you make sure those premiums were paid? Her attorneys really advocated for her, and they also advocated for Ron Young as well. Eventually, the defense is able to have new tests conducted on the pipe bomb fragments that killed Gary. They found DNA on it. It wasn't Ron's, and it wasn't Pam's either. Remember, everything that the prosecution has, all of their evidence at this point is still circumstantial. The prosecution even goes as far as to present a new suspect.
Well, there's an individual named Neil McNeese who Gary Triano had ripped off for about $80,000 and was very angry at Gary for doing that. And he was a heroin addict. He was a trust baby. He had a lot of money and had this thing about Gary because of the fact that Gary bilked him out of $80,000.
And so the defense believed Neil was the man who ordered Gary's murder. And they even identified the people who they believed helped Neil accomplish this. Even Neil McNeese's doctor, personal private doctor, testified saying that he had heard Neil threaten to kill Gary multiple times.
The defense thinks they have a really strong case. The only problem with Neil McNeese is he actually couldn't go on trial. He died of a drug overdose in 2002. And during the time of the initial investigation, he was never questioned. But the defense is confident. They're like, we got this. It's fine. Also, the debt between Gary and Neil McNeese was over a ring. It was for $80,000, which is a lot of money, but it was back in 1991. So he was like, why would he play the long game for all these years and kill him in 1996? It just didn't add up.
No, and the defense had no real proof that Neil was involved. And so the prosecution reminds the jury of those 44 payments made by Pam to Ron Young, which added up to over $400,000. And then they put Pam's close friend, Laura Chapman, on the stand.
Laura Chapman has an interesting eyewitness account of something that happened between Gary and Pam. Apparently, they got in an argument when she was over, and Gary pulled a gun out on Pam and then left. So then Pam called a bunch of her friends over to console her. And that's when she told her friends that she knew that Gary had a $2 million life insurance policy. And Laura says all of this on the stand.
She said that she should just hire a hitman, have him taken out.
So then when Laura heard what happened to Gary, she was like, I remember those things that Pam said. Wait, did Pam do this?
So after that testimony, there was a real shift with the jury. And when it comes time for the verdict on April 8th, 2014, the jury finds her guilty. She is sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, much to the shock of her attorneys. She stands to make a statement at her sentencing, and she reiterates that she is innocent. Now, both Ron Young and Pamela Phillips are appealing their sentences, but author and criminal defense attorney Carrie Droban comes back to say, they're not innocent, they're sociopaths. They have no empathy, and they knew exactly what they wanted, which was money. I'm just going to say this again. This entire case is built on circumstantial evidence. Because, yeah, okay, Laura's a witness and she says, I heard her say that. Where's the proof? Where is the DNA? Where is the real proof?
The real innocent person, I feel, would be Ron. Because if he was supposed to have, I don't know, executed the explosion or orchestrated it and they didn't find any trace DNA. Listen, something happened. The circumstance being that the totals they were talking about totaled $2 million. Very weird. But they never say anything. I don't know. I feel like I want to ask someone about this. I feel like maybe first degree murder. Well, I mean, they chose first degree murder because obviously it would have had to have been premeditated. If it went down the way they said, it would have had to have been premeditated and pre-planned. So I guess murder in the first would be the right thing. But I don't know. What if it's not?
What if it's not? I mean, that's the thing. There's a lot of what ifs. I'm not saying that Ron and Pamela are innocent. I'm just like, where's the DNA evidence? You know, they never say.
Well, they don't even need DNA. They need something tying them to the
confession.
Crime scene or paying a hitman or paying some, even if there's like not DNA evidence, because maybe they hired someone to do it. It just feels like there's a lot of holes. And yes, I think they're pieces of shit. Also, why was he recording their phone calls? That's weird to record someone's phone calls, but you can't put people away for life in prison because they're weird, or else you and I would be in jail for life. I mean, we would be part of the entertainment committee and be a fucking blasty blast, but still. So you did notice the timeline of this was really long. I was very curious about that too. So in 2011, the prosecution hit a snag because they had to postpone some of the trial because Pam was declared, quote, mentally incompetent to stand trial. So they said that she would be better, I guess, in due time. And it wasn't until 2012 she was finally declared able to stand trial. And then, of course, the system,
right.
You know, the system of getting a court date and trial and voir direing and all that stuff. But yeah, she was declared mentally unfit.
Wow.
So I don't know if she had some kind of episode or a breakdown of sorts or what happened, but she was not able to stand trial. What did you think of her statement to the court where she's like, this has been a nightmare. It's been really hard for me.
All she said was, I'm innocent.
Living in Aspen, ma'am, living off $2 million. Like, also, where are your fucking kids? Going to Vienna, going to Switzerland. You are fine.
Listen, people can be spoiled, entitled assholes. It doesn't mean that they're a murderous, spoiled, entitled asshole. I really think that the statement she gave at her sentencing was based in shock. I think she really thought that she was going to walk away from this because of the amount of circumstantial evidence. I think that she was in total shock and was like, I am innocent and this has been a nightmare. Yeah, being on trial for murder is a nightmare, but she didn't say anything mind-blowing.
Right. What do you think happened? Do you think she did it? Do you think she hired someone to do it? I don't think Ron would be able to tie his shoes, let alone make and pull off a pipe bomb scam.
Listen, being able to build a pipe bomb, that is a very specific skill set. I would be curious to know more about his his background, but like everyone said, he was a smart, I don't know about that part, financial consultant. Like, how would he know how to build a pipe bomb? There's not exactly a YouTube video for that. So I don't know. I mean, the truth is Gary made a lot of enemies. What happened to him is awful. It's tragic, but he was involved with a lot of people who don't think twice about killing someone over money. So do I think that, you know, he fucked with the wrong person? It's very possible. And do I think that Pam and Ron could be involved? It's very possible. I just don't think there's enough evidence in this case to support that.
Thank you, counselor. Say something funny.
Well, we learned a lot on this episode about how you can't always believe American Greed when they say someone is smart. Mm-hmm. And we also learned that American Greed likes to insult people. If American Greed was writing a review for us, for I Think Not, mm-hmm. what do you think they would say about us?
Loud.
Ugly.
Stupid.
Too much.
Gay.
Sluts.
Goes against God.
Too much butt talk.
That woman says she's a lawyer.
Too many butt pics.
They go off topic.
Too many nipples.
Why is all of yours body parts? You're just naming body parts. We love you and we sing sometimes. It's American Greed and that's for episodes.
Wait, can someone please start a discussion in the Facebook group? If you're not part of our Facebook group, now is a great time to join. It's a great way to connect with the community. You get a lot of our announcements there. It's called the I Think Not Podcast Facebook Discussion Group. But can someone please start a debate on this? I'd be very curious to hear what everyone has to say about this.
Joey is really excited that he's challenging something. I am so proud of you. Please follow us on Instagram, I Think Not Pod, and TikTok. We love it when you share our content and share our stuff and our stories. We just love you so much. And be sure and check out our website to see if we are coming to a city near you on tour. It is our most favorite thing. We guarantee a good time. No Down Bitch is ever alone at one of our shows. You will go and you will be embraced and among friends. It is truly our joy to see you all love on each other, meet each other, meet new friends. It's a fucking good time. I'm not gonna lie. You know, sometimes I'm humble and self-deprecating, but I'm gonna say our live shows are fucking top-notch. Until then, I love you, down bitches.
I love you, DBs, and I love you, T.J. Lamar, you sweet little angel baby.
I love you, Joey.
I love you.
Bye. Bye.
Oh, they have too many nipples.
And I guess at that meeting.
The meeting?
Yep.
The meeting?
And I
what
guess
about the meeting?
She gets a 300.
Bills. I got 300 of these. Let's go. 300. Who wants a bill, bitch? May it rain.
Oh, God. She gets a 300.
How much did you make? 300?
Okay.
$300,000? No, dollars. Gary Toronto. Remember that guy from that car bombing 10 years?
Toronto.
Toronto.
Not Toronto. That's...